Thank you, Binah. So, well, apparently it's the last conservative talk in this workshop, hopefully. Anyone else wants to talk about conservative? Let's first go over what is a conservative CSP. It can be defined in many ways. In one way, the way it's used in the artificial intelligence community is that every instance is a regular CSP instance, plus for every variable we are given a list of possible values for this variable. So we have this extra input L. In our terms it can be said that a conservative CSP is a CSP over constraint language, for instance, that contains all the unary relations possible. Or if we look at algebras, it's a CSP of a conservative algebra, where conservative means that if we apply any term operation to some elements, the output of this function will be among the values. So it preserves all the subsets. Okay, so the first result on this conservative paper was the conference paper appeared in 2003, so 8 years ago. The journal paper is about to appear in Transactions of Computational Logic as this year, so you can find it on their website already. It's kind of long. Why do I want to revisit it today? Firstly, because other people try to do the same in a kind of simpler way. And I'd like to keep my approach to also do it simpler. And what makes me thinking that I can do that is certain developments over the last 8 years, such as generalized majority-minority algorithm, or more generally, few sub-powers algorithm. But I don't need the full power of few sub-powers. So I'm happy with this kind of reduced version of the algorithm. So you see, it was invented later, so it's a somewhat new development. Firstly, Marotti's retraction trick. Okay, it was just presented this morning, quite recent. And finally, this stuff about absorbing set universe invented by these really smart guys. And I will not use it at all. But they somehow managed to refine certain ideas from that long paper. I hope to give almost complete proof, right? So if I can read 2 pages a minute, I can finish even early. So that's what I am going to try. Okay, so I'm going to present a somewhat shorter proof. Certain claims I will still, certain statements I still be using as black box, but actually if you compare to the whole thing, they're kind of small. Okay. The approach I'm going to use is actually the one explained by Sasha yesterday with those colored edges and things like that. Starting point of this approach is if we look at conservative algebra, we assume it's solvable in polynomial, the CSP is solvable in polynomial time. What we know that the CSP over every subalgebra must be solvable in polynomial time. In particular, CSP over every 2-element subalgebra must be solvable in polynomial time. Therefore, every 2-element subalgebra must have one of these Schaeffer separation, so semi-lattice majority or affine operation. Well, it's Malthus, but I better use this affine. Okay, so what are we going to do? We are going to color every edge in one of the 3 colors, but clearly it may happen that the same 2-element subalgebra has both semi-lattice and majority. What do we do in this case? I don't want to use a 4th color. Also, it's possible, right? I need only 7 colors, so even perfect, but still, I don't want to use more colors, so what I'm going to do, I'm going to claim that the semi-latest separation is my favorite, and it has precedence over everything else. So if my two elements subalgebra has this asymilitic separation, then I say, okay, it's a semi-latest edge. And I don't care about anything else. Well, if I have a two-element subalgebra that doesn't have a semi-lattice operation, but it does a majority operation, again, I like majority more than affine, and I say that this edge is a majority edge. Well, and finally, if nothing works, there is only this affine operation, I say, okay, it's an affine edge. Right. Well, if we put everything on the picture, then what we see is that for every algebra, conservative algebra, we can draw an edge-colored graph. So the nodes of the graph are the elements of the algebra, and the edges are colored according to those rules. Okay, and what do we know? Well, in that result, the old result basically says that if my graph is complete, meaning that every pair is an edge and colored somehow, then the algebra, well, it's equivalent to the algebra having a Taylor term, and then the CSP is soluble in polynomial time, otherwise it's NP-complete. So I'm going to use these pictures. Okay. Well, and interesting thing, it's kind of elementary, that actually these semi-lattice majority affine operations can be uniformized a lot. So if I have a semi-lattice operation on every semi-lattice edge, then actually we can assume it's the same term operation. If we have a, say, majority operation on majority edges, then we can assume that it's the same operation, and so on. So in a sense, we need only three operations in our algebra. So the next step I'm going to take, also it's not reflected on the slide, I'm going to take is I take the reduct of my algebra. Right? I throw out all other operations except for these three selected ones. And what with them? What is a very nice outcome of that? Operations here are at most ternary, right? This means that if I have such operations that preserve every three-element set, then they preserve everything, right? So in a sense, this result can be generalized to three conservative algebras, and Libar cannot do that. Right. So it can be generalized to three conservative algebras. Well, in this proof, I keep the approach, so it still works for three conservative algebras. Actually, also in the theorem and in this talk about colored graph, I don't need anything else, but for technical purposes, we will see it later. For technical purposes, I want to know about these operations a little more. I'm going to select them more carefully than just any operations. And it turns out that it's kind of easy. We can assume that my semi-lattice operation is the first projection on every, not only actually majority, but also every affine edge. I can assume that every, majority operation is the first projection on every affine edge. I don't know what it is on semi-lattice edges. And the same for the affine operation. So I can assume that it's just the first projection on everywhere else. So these are very nice operations, and they don't interact if they should not. Okay. What else can I do once I selected these three term operations? Note that the semi-lattice operation actually defines an order on a set, right? So initially, my graph is undirected, but if I fix my semi-lattice operation, it becomes directed. Well, I mean, the semi-lattice edges become directed. So actually what I have is a graph like this. And actually if we start with some conservative algebra, it may happen that we can select several orientations. But we are happy with any of them. With any of them. And also for sort of for convenience, I am going to use multiplication instead of F for the similarities operation. Okay, so this is the basically everything about the graph. Okay, actually, I will be cheating a little all the time. Actually, I need these graphs not only for algebras, for conservative algebras. I need them also for subdirect products of conservative algebras. So they can be defined in the same way. They can be defined basically in the same way. So edges are two elements of algebras, and you and one can check that there are plenty of them. So the well, there is sufficient amount of them such that any subalgebra induces a connected graph, so we can do all these paths in the graph and so on and so on. And the good thing is that most properties, which I'm going to prove, actually don't depend on the completeness of the graph. They actually depend only on connectivity of the graph. So they can be generalized for such subdirect products very easily with just some kind of minor changes. So everywhere I will say that, okay, we do this for conservative algebra and so on, but actually sometimes we need it for subdirect products of conservative algebra. But it's not a problem because that all the results basically look the same in that case. Okay, so the main object I'm going to use is this AS components, as I will be calling them. And, well, AS stands for affine similarities. So what does it mean? It's a minimal subset of my algebra, or subalgebra actually, such that it is minimal with respect to the property. There is no affine or similarities directed edge in the graph that sticks out of B. And it's minimal with respect to this property, right? So if I take some graph like this, okay, I assume that all the remaining edges are majority, then what can I say about AS components? Well, say clearly these two things are AS components, right? Well, we don't count this edge because it points towards the element, while here we need it from the element, going from the element. Well, there is a big one. Say if I have an element, if I take a component consisting this, containing this element, I also have to include this one, right? Because I can go along this edge. I can, it must contain this one because I can go along this edge. It must contain this one, right? And it must contain this one because I can go like that. So AS components here look like this. This is one, second, and third. Okay. Well, actually, in the original proof, in the long one, I also used same construction, but it was one of many. And it turns out, well, as actual Liber noticed, that it's enough. We don't need other constructions at all. Okay. Reductions. So what will be our approach? The approach will be, we take an instance of a conservative CSP and start reducing it so that on every step we get an instance such that all domains are smaller than in the original instance. Or, well, slightly, if we do it a little slower, then let's say some domains are smaller. Well, say every domain that is some kind of fixed set, well, we are going to reduce it every time. So every time we kind of exclude one of the algebras involved, one of the domain involved. So it's more or less the same approach as Miklos used. on every step of reduction, we exclude some type of algebra. So we can make only only bounded number of steps before we eliminate everything, and then we somehow have a solution. Okay, so this will be the overall approach. Then the only thing we have to show is that every time we can make a step. Right. Okay, or find a solution. Okay, we're going to use two types of reductions. First of them is we will use these AS components. And somehow, if either find a solution, and in this case we're happy, or we will show that we can exclude those components completely, and therefore our algebra becomes smaller. So this is one type of a step. And second, we're going to use Miklos's retraction trick. And again, in this case, it just works exactly as Miklos just presented. Okay, so we are going to use both of them and make sure that every time we can make the instance smaller. I'll spend almost all time on this part. Well, simply because there is nothing, almost nothing, to talk about this part. Miklos has said everything we need to know. So mostly I will be talking about this part. Okay, linked relations. Suppose we have a binary relation, right? We can define two congruences on both factors of this subdirect product, and they are defined in the usual way. Say the congruence on A is defined as a transitive closure of pairs when two elements have a common neighbor. Two elements have a common neighbor, right? So, well, this means that if two elements are in such a relation, then we can find a path in that. If we look at the relation as a bipartite graph, we can find a path in this bipartite graph. Then we put them together in one class of the congruence, right? And on B, it's defined the same way. Only we have to flip the pairs. So pairs in the second position must have a common neighbor. Elements in the second position must have a common neighbor. We say that a relation is linked if both are total relations. Or just one, equivalent to just one. If it's a subdirect product, one is enough. Yeah. Just one. Right. Okay. That's been used several times already, so nothing new. Another claim that I leave without a proof, but something like this was in the original paper as well, is suppose we have a binary relation, but remember, actually, it's not necessarily a relation over conservative algebras. It may be a relation over two algebras that are subdirect product of those. Right. So if we have a relation which is linked, and we take an AS component of the factors, right, and suppose that these two AS components are not completely alien to each other, so they some element in one of them has a neighbor in the other, then we show that the direct product of the Cartesian product of the two sets is a subset of the relation. So in this case, if we have something from a one AS component to another, then we have everything. Okay. So if I draw a picture, well, my relation is linked. I take an AS component. Well, clearly it's AS, right? It's red and blue. So then in this case, if they have a pair inside them, they have all possible pairs. Okay. Another statement I am going to use without a proof, and that was in the long paper. Also, it doesn't constitute a major part of it, so it's kind of short. Saying that if we have a subdirect product of conservative algebra. Right? And we choose an S component in each. Right? Such that, again, there is a tuple that goes through all these components. Through all these components. Then, the restriction of my relation into this thing is a subdirect product of them. Firstly. And secondly, it is an AS component of the relation. So subdirect, that is the important part. The subdirect product of AS components is an AS component. So somehow if we do this subdirect thing, then we can travel in two graphs simultaneously. We can travel in two graphs simultaneously. N graphs simultaneously. Okay, strengths. Again, I use Liber's terminology by two reasons. First, it's introduced, and second, in the long paper, I had several constructions like that, so they were without names. Well, it's convenient to use a name. Okay, again, I take a subdirect product of conservative algebras, I fix some, it should be A like this, so it's an algebra. I thought, well, it's okay, it's true, but not very useful. Well, it should be the algebra. So it's a component of an algebra. And I take two coordinates, I take S components in each, and I say that they are related, the positions are related with respect to these two S components. If for any tuple from the relation, if one component of the tuple in the S component, the other one must be there in the corresponding component. So they are somehow cannot go outside. If I start in AI, I cannot go outside AJ, and vice versa. So vice versa. Now, if I fix if I have several of such things or of components, then I call it a strand with respect to S components A1 to AK. If every two, if every pair of them are related. So every two coordinates there are AIJ related. Yes. Okay. Again, if I draw a picture, I start with say AI, and well, we may have more complicated structure there, something like that, for instance, and. Well, a strand would look like this. In this picture, it would look like a cylinder, such that nothing goes outside, nothing comes inside. Nothing comes inside it. Right? So, well, there might be another strand, say like this. Oh, well, there is no other strand here, but anyway, so something is not in the strand, then there must be something going outside, for instance. Or coming inside somehow. Okay. And the statement I'm going to prove is basically this one. That's the key thing that is also proved in the original paper, but in a slightly different setting. Anyway, so rectangularity lemma. Not binary now, just rectangularity lemma. Suppose I have a subdirect product. And again, I have AS components such that there is a tuple that goes throughout all the components. Right? Okay, now I look at strands with respect to these things. It's a partition of the set from 1 to n. So it's a partition of the set from 1 to n. Suppose this is my partition. So I have kind of chunks of the whole relations, of the whole relation into strands. Right, so these are the, why is it S? I guess it should be N, okay. Anyway, and, well, I denote by RI, it's better seen in the picture. So RI is this cylinder that is cut out of the whole relation, right? Then what we can prove is that the Cartesian product of these things is a subset of R. Is a subset of R. So in a relation, if we have these strands, if we have something going through throughout all the S components, then the chunks of tuples inside strands we can combine in any way. So in a sense, they are completely independent. They are completely independent. Again, if I draw a picture, this is one strand, second, third. Well, and these are A1, A2, A3, and so on, right? Then, there is something else as well, right? Then what? These are strands, so we have something like that. Then I can take anything from here, whatever I want from there, and their combination is in the relation. Okay. Well, this is what I'm going to prove. Okay, so first of all, proof. First of all, I'm going to show that it suffices to consider the case of binary relation. Very simple case, right? Why is that? Okay, suppose we have this situation as described in the rectangularity lemma. So we have a subdirect product, we have AS components, there is a tuple going throughout all the components. Good, so this is the picture. Okay, and suppose that the first and the last component are in different strands. Well, just for simplicity. It can be first and second, of course, but suppose first and second are in different strands. Then what does it mean? What does it mean? This means that there are tuples in the relation such that we start somewhere here, say, we start somewhere here and end up here. But if we start somewhere in a different place, we may end up in a different place here. Right? We don't know what's going on in, well, all the other way around. All the other way around, but it doesn't matter. Right? Well, we don't care what's going on in between, but in this binary projection, it must be either like this or like that. Okay. So take two tuples that witness that. So one tuple goes like this, another one goes like that. Right? Now, what's happening? It may happen that the second tuple that goes outside, for a while, remains in the AS components. But then, at some point, it leaves them and goes completely outside. Right? What is this border? Clearly, this border must go between strands. We cannot leave an AS component inside the strand. So it must be between strands. What are we going to do now? So suppose that the first part, when the second tuple goes inside the selected components, is the coordinates position from 1 to m, just for convenience, like that. And it's outside on the remaining positions. So what do? I split my relations in two right here and consider the whole thing as a subdirect product of this and the subdirect product of that. Now, if I show that any tuple here, and remember that by connectivity lemma, everything inside here, what I have here is an AS component of the big relation, of the big algebra. What I have here is an AS component of the big algebra. So, if now I know the result for the binary case, this means that anything from here can be extended by anything from there, right? And that's it. Now, I can look at smaller chunks, do the same, and eventually I get the result. So, binary case is what we need. We can forget about these huge relations and work only with binary case. Okay, so let's look at the binary case. So we have this subdirect product of two algebras, AS components that are sort of related to each other, so everything's fine, but they're in different strands. What does it mean? This means that, well, again, for simplicity, suppose it works like this. We have two pairs, AB, A prime, B prime, in the relation, such that these guys are inside the S component. One of this one of the second one of the second components is inside the S component, and the other one is outside. Right? That I know for sure. If they're in different strengths, it's either this or the other way around, but we don't care. Okay. So first of all, I'm going to prove a couple of claims. So first of all, we prove that actually we can choose them in such a way that the first components are the same. Well, how do I do that? Remember that A prime and A and A prime are inside the AS component. What does it mean? This means that if I start at A and go along simulattice edges, directly simulattice edges, affine edges, and so on, I must be able to arrive to A prime. It's a minimal set. AS component is a minimal set with this property. So if I do this some kind of expansion, I have to arrive to A prime at some point. So what I know is that there is a sequence in R actually, but we don't care about the second coordinate at all. So we look at the first. Well, for now, we look at the first only. So we can start from AB, go along one of the along a match of one of the two types, arrive to something else, then continue, and eventually we arrive to A prime, B prime. Again, I don't know what's going on here. I don't know what is going on here. But this one is inside the S component. This one is outside the S component. So there must be a point where I actually cross the border. Right? So there must be a place where I actually cross the border. Suppose it happens here. Well, it may happen several times, but I can choose one of them. Right? So I can forget about everything else. Take my AB to be this one, and A prime, B prime to be this one. Okay. Now, B is inside the S component. B prime is outside the S component. What does it mean? I cannot have a semilattice edge going there. This would mean that B prime is inside the component. I cannot have an affine edge between them. It would mean B prime is inside the S component. So it's either semilattice edge going there or it's a majority edge. Okay. And that's enough to prove what we want. Say, if this is a semilattice edge, then what I do, I simply multiply the two things, right? If I put AB in the first place, like here, then the product of these two, then the product of these two must be what? Okay, so if this is a semilattice edge, well, we may sleep them actually, but anyway, so if this is a semilattice edge, then A prime times A times A prime is A prime. B times B prime is always B, no matter what. If it's a semilattice edge, that it should be the great element B. If it's a majority edge, then this is the first projection. Right? So we have A prime B. Well, if it's an affine edge, then we have to use these. So this is a fine edge. So the result, H is an affine operation here on AA prime. So H of AAA prime is A prime. Right? H of BB, B prime. What is it? If it's a semilattice edge, then it will be here. And if it's a majority edge, then it still will be here. So it's A prime B both ways. Okay, so we have the first part. Now, let's look at congruences of AS components. It turns out that they are kind of very, very restricted they may have a very, very restricted form. So suppose I have an algebra, I have an AS component, and I have a congruence such that some element of A prime and some element outside of A prime are in this congruence, are related by this congruence. Then what I'm claiming is that the whole A prime must be in one congruence block. Okay, why is that? So I have my two elements, A and B. This is the congruence block. So what I do, if lambda is non-trivial on A prime, then there must be another element in A prime which is not related to A. Okay, let's take such element, but not any element. Element that is connected to A by semilattice edge, well, going that way, or a fine edge. Well, there must be such thing because, well, if I start with C, A must be in the S component as well, so I have to be able to get somehow from here to here. Okay, now what happens between C and B? Well, we actually know what may happen between C and B. It must be either semilattice edge going that way or a majority edge. But now we again can combine the things using this three iterations. Well, actually one is enough to get what we want. Firstly, observe that the product B times C and B is in gamma. Why is that? It's because B times C is always, so B time, what is B times C? B times C, well, if this is a majority edge, then this is B, and we are good. If this is a semilattice edge, then what do we have? If it's a semilattice edge, then we can replace B with A, right? We can replace B here with A, and A times C is always A. And A times C is always A. So B times C must be B. So this must be a majority edge. So if this is a semilattice edge, it doesn't work. Okay. But if it's a semilattice edge, well, I just use this thing. A and B are related by lambda. C and C are related, and clearly, then A, C, and C. What is A, C, and C? Well, it's C. It's A. It's always A, right? If it's semilattice, it must be A. If it's a fine, that it's the first projection. Then this is the first projection. So it's always A, and the other pair. Well, it's a majority edge, so it must be C. So we have that AC is in lambda, a contradiction. Okay, so A prime is inside a congruence block. Okay, now what? Let's return to our relation R. So, as we proved, we have this pairs AB, AB prime, and so on. Now, let lambda be the link congruence on the second algebra B, right? We know that B prime is inside the lambda block. Well, it's non-trivial. The congruence is non-trivial, so, and it joins B and B prime, an element inside and an element outside of an AS component. So the whole B prime must be inside a lambda block. Now, we restrict the whole relation onto a lambda block on the B side and the corresponding link congruence block on the other side. This is a link relation. And therefore, by the binary rectangularity lemma, the product of A prime B prime must be null. So the first two claims basically reduce everything to linked relations, and then we can use the rectangularity lemma. to show that this is a direct product. Okay, so rectangularity theorem is proved. Okay. Now, what do we do to exclude the S components? Well, it's very simple. Suppose we have our instance now. It's not a relation, it's an instance. Okay. More sense? Yeah. So what we do, first of all, we find components, AS components, such that they are all consistent. Meaning that for every pair, there is a, for every pair of variables, we have to assume some kind of consistency condition, like 2-3 consistency is good enough. We assume that these two are consistent, meaning that in every relation there is an edge going from AV to AW. Well, I'll show how it can be done. It's not clear from here that it can be done at all, but I'll show how to do that. Then we find these trends relative to this bunch of AS components. Okay, that's easier, but again, I'll comment on it a little later. Next. For every strand, so nothing goes in, nothing comes in, nothing goes out, right? So I restrict my problem onto one strand, and only on these AS components. This is a smaller problem. It's a strand, so if I restrict it here, it's restricted everywhere. So it's a smaller problem, and by my assumption, we reduce things to a smaller instance. Right? So we can do that. What happens? What can happen? Two things. One thing is every such problem has a solution. Then by the rectangularity theorem, we can combine these solutions in any way. Right? In any relation, a tuple from here, a tuple from here are completely independent, then can be combined in different, in any way. So if every subproblem has a solution, I know there is a solution for the whole thing. What if one of them doesn't have a solution? If one of them doesn't have a solution, then what we know? We know that, again, it's a strand. If there is no solution that, say, takes this value, if there is no solution of a small problem that takes, say, this value, in the bigger thing, there cannot be a solution that takes this value. Because, the corresponding part of it must be inside the subproblem, and we ruled it out. Okay, so if there is no solution here, we can remove this element. It's a conservative algebra, well, we can do that. We just throw out these elements, and again, we get smaller instance. Okay, now a couple of comments how we can do that. Finding strands and AS components. So it's easy to find a strand, right? So what we have to do, take an AS component anywhere in it for some variable, in the domain of some variable, and just look which variables are related to this component. That's it. We can find a strand, very easy. Okay, so we start with a set, then look which other sets are good, we start with a set, look which other sets are good, and so we get strands. Okay, now, why can we always find a sequence of AS components such that they are pairwise consistent? And why this actually implies that, I have the rectangularity theorem? Well, this is what I prefer to call a Chinese remainder theorem. Well, what do we have in Chinese remainder theorem? If we have something pairwise consistent, then we have the whole solution. So it's more or less like this. If we have a relation and components, and they are consistent for every pair, then they're just, the whole thing is consistent. Okay, how can we show that? We know that for sure in one case, the majority, when we have a majority. But look, what is the connection between AS components? It cannot be affine, It cannot be semi-lattice, because otherwise we have to join one of the components to the other. They all must be majority. So basically what we do, we exploit the fact that between any two elements here and here, there is a majority edge. So it's like almost majority thing. And in this case, we just know that any consistent pair like this can be extended to a globally consistent sequence. Well, thanks to Peter's proof, well, we just know that, and we can use that here. Okay. So we can use that approach here as well and get what we need. Okay. So this is the first type of reduction. If we have an instance such that some of the domains have non-trivial AS components, we can use it to either find a solution or eliminate some components. Right. Okay, so the difficult case is when we don't have proper AS components. So if we are solving, for instance, a problem for a single strand. Right. Okay. So what do we do in this case? In this case, we use Nikolic's retraction. Okay, so let me remind what we are talking about. And suppose we have a class of algebras of similar types, closed undertaking subalgebras, and retracts. Well, I use here idempotent unary polynomials, but apparently it's not that important. Well, in the conservative case, by the way, we even don't need this second part. In a sense, every such retract is a subalgebra. Okay. But we need to know that this retraction exists. That's important. Okay, then the second Miklos's trick that uses a binary operation. So suppose we have a binary term operation on A, such that it's idempotent if we fix the first argument. For each element of A, the map from X to FXA, or the other way around, it should be, right? Is not subjective. It should be the other way around, sorry. It should be AX, I guess. Okay. Well, one of them is wrong. And it says something about subalgebra, so here it should be the other way around. Yeah. Okay. So this one is right here. Well, imagine this F of AX. Okay. Well, we don't have a problem with that unless this condition happens for all elements. Because any subset is a subalgebra in our case. So let's see what kind of operation we can use here, and in which cases these conditions hold or violated. Okay, what do we use? Well, in that case, we can throw out, we can reduce our instance to a smaller one. Okay, I'm going to use this multiplication for the binary operation, obviously. It's the only binary operation I have. I cannot use anything else at all. Right, so I'm going to use this. And this binary operation is a first projection on anything but semi-lattice. Well, I have that. So if XY form a semi-lattice edge, then XY already gives you the maximum element, and so, well, multiplying more just doesn't help. If it's not semi-lattice edge, then multiplication is the first projection, so this is just x, and x times x is x. Okay. Now, here it's right. Suppose now that there is a element in A such that the map from x to ax is surjective. What does it mean? This actually means that for any x, we have that. Right? Because, if ax is a semi-lattice edge, it must be either a or x, right? Nothing else. So if it's a, then it's not surjective. Well, unless X is A, of course, but if X is not A, then even if we have A here, it means that the map is not surjective. So if it is surjective, well, we must have that. And what does it mean? This means that what can we say about this A? Suppose A is connected with some affine majority H to some other element. Then multiplying, we get A. Too bad. Suppose that there is a semi-lattice edge going into A. We multiply A by that X, we get A. Not good. So the only picture we have is something like this. We have a neutral element, A, and semi-lattice edge is going to all other points. What is good about that? We know for sure that A doesn't belong to any AS component. Therefore, this thing has a proper AS component, and we can use the first type of reduction. This case is done. Okay. What's going to happen? Suppose now that this map is surjective for every A. That's the other bad thing that can happen. Suppose that it is surjective for every A. Well, this means again that X times A is X. For everything, for any A and any X, which means that this multiplication is simply projection everywhere. How can it happen? It can happen only if we don't have semi-lattice edges at all. So then the picture is like that. No red in the picture. Okay. Now we have to use that generalized majority-minority thing. What is generalized majority-minority? I am going to use not even full power of generalized majority-minority, but only a little part, which is for Turner operations. So a Turner operation is called the generalized majority-minority if for any pair AB, operation on AB is either majority, or, well, actually multiple, but minority is okay in my case as well, or minority. Well, it's more or less like look like this picture, right? The difficulty is we use different operations here, but we clearly can combine them in a very easy way. And this is this one is a majority on each majority edge and affine on each affine edge. So we use Victor's algorithm to solve this case. That's it. Okay. 50 minutes. Well, there are some questions around this, of course. One is sort of most interesting to me, and it may be interesting to Liber, for instance, and Marcin. Is it true that these AS components are the same as absorbing subuniverses? Well, they have exactly the same properties, which is always suspicious. So they have all these rectangularity theorems and all this stuff. And in a sense, it's kind of very tempting to believe that they are the same. Because if you look at, you take an AS component. If you look just at every pair of elements, pairwise, these AS components and absorption is just the same. So if you have, say, a semi-lattice edge, well, you can absorb the big element by the small element by the bigger one. If you have a majority edge, still you can absorb, but somehow things don't quite work by two reasons. First, this is when we look at pairs of elements, right? But we use ternary operations. So what if we look at triples? Will absorption be still absorption here for AS components? I don't know. This is one thing. And second thing, which is maybe, I can believe that sort of by making an effort, there is a chance to show that, yes, it kind of remains that. But actually, there is another thing that before doing all these things, I transformed the algebra a lot. So remember, in the very beginning, I say, okay, we take these three operations and forget about everything else. Well, it doesn't affect the graphs. Well, it does affect the graph a little, but just a little. It doesn't affect all the proofs here, but it can destroy absorption completely because you throw out so much, right? Well, it may not work exactly the same way. For instance, sometimes you may have a semi-lattice separation working both ways, but here you are forced to remove one of them. What happens? Okay, so this is it. Thank you. Okay. Why? Okay, for a couple of hours yesterday. No, well, I was thinking of it in sort of more general context, but there you just have easy counterexamples. And I'm kind of was puzzled if it works at least in the conservative case. I don't know.
The thing which is confusing to me, so if you just replace AS components with minimal encoding set, then your code is correct. But the same is a major theorem.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. So if you can show that there is this majority of things between any two absorbing sets, then. Combine them in the right way, I'm thinking. Well, it has to do something, right? Like, more or less along these lines. Well, fine. Well, I can combine these terms to get an NU. A weak NU, sorry. To get a weak NU. So, well, it's not an issue of... I cannot say a single operation is more useful than a bunch of operations. I believe in this context, several operations are more convenient, at least.
Okay.
But then you again can take the reduct, right? You take you can take your weak and you and forget about everything else. Then you can sort of do the same thing. Draft rule will be different, but who cares? No, well, okay, so suppose you can do the following. So you have your algebra, and on one pair you have, say, semilattice and majority. Now, somehow you can take a reduct of the algebra, such that it still has a tail, well, like, just throwing out everything but one weakened U operation, right? So you look what happens on your two elements of algebra, right? If semilattice disappears, fine, right? Okay. Okay, so, well, suppose you have only these three operations. Then, literally, you have only one binary operation, I mean, non-trivial. Because, well, majority or minority on every two-element set, if you do something, well, they have empty set of non-trivial binary operations. Right? So, yes, in a kind of, if you have more operations, you may look at different angle, use another binary operation, and so on. But if you are in a situation like that, and you have to be able to do something in this case, then...
Yeah. Okay.